Good morning, everyone. I call this meeting of the Joint House and Senate Education Committees to order. It's 8:04 a.m. here on Wednesday, March 11th. We are in the Betty Davis Committee Room here in the State Capitol Building, located in beautiful downtown Juneau. I just want to remind folks who are here in the room if they could please mute their cell phones. Documents for today's meetings have been uploaded to BASIS and distributed to members. There's also additional copies right outside the door for folks who might be interested. Education committee members present today. We have from the Senate, Vice Chair President Stevens, Senator Keel, Senator Bjorkman, Senator Yunt, and myself, Senator Lukey Gale Tobin. From the House Education Committee, we have Co-Chair Representative Hemshue, Co-Chair Representative Story, Representative Dibert, Representative Eichheit, and I believe, and Representative Elam, and I believe we'll be joined here by our additional members here shortly. Please let the record reflect, we do have a quorum to conduct business. I want to thank Renzo from the Juneau LIO for moderating today's meeting, and Mary Gwen, as always, for being with us from Senate Records. All right, folks, I apologize, as I am running from another committee hearing, so if I start talking in corrections, please just correct me. We've been joined by Representative Underwood. On the agenda today, we have a presentation from the State Board of Education and Early Development on their 2026 annual report to the Alaska State Legislature. This annual report is required under state law, and for folks who are interested, that is Alaska Statute 14.07.168. We are joined today by the Chair of the State Board of Education and the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development. Ms. Stockhausen and Dr. Bishop are here if you would like to identify yourselves to the record and then begin your presentation when you are ready.
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, my name is Sally Stockhausen. I'm the chair of the Alaska State Board of Education Early Development.
For the record, my name is Dina Bishop, Commissioner of Education.
So good morning, Chair Tobin, Co-Chair Hemshue, Co-Chair Story, and esteemed members of the Joint House and Senate Education Committees. We appreciate the opportunity to engage with you as we work together to ensure every Alaska student has access to an excellent education every day. I want to begin by noting the State Board of Education report to the legislature was transmitted to the legislature on February 13, 2025. The time frame for this report spans from January 1, 2025 through December 31, 2025. This presentation follows the same structure as the written annual report that was transmitted to the legislature. The State Board of Education serves in a governance and policy setting capacity, while the commissioner is responsible for the day-to-day management and operations of the department. I will be providing a high-level overview of the board's work and statewide progress, and I will defer to Commissioner Bishop for any questions related to departmental management or operational details. The State Board of Education consists of seven voting members, a student advisor, and a military advisor. I serve as the chair representing the 1st Judicial District. Joining me on the board are James Fields, who serves as the first vice chair and represents the REAA districts. Pamela Dupras serves as the second vice chair and is an at-large member. Kathy McCullum represents the 3rd Judicial District. I think they're standing behind
me. Yes, they are.
Barbara Tindall represents the 4th Judicial District. Kim Berge serves as the at-large member. Lieutenant Colonel James Fowley serves as the military advisor to the board. Amber Sherman serves as the student advisor to the board. And Joshua Bowling serves as our student advisor-elect. And he will take over once Ms. Sherman goes on to college.
Thank you. I just have a quick question. As we've seen a continued vacancy in the 2nd Judicial District, and are curious when that will be filled.
We are hoping soon. I think there's been some applicants, and so I'm hopeful that that can be sooner rather than later.
Yep, that's exactly what I had heard.
We are currently seeking candidates for the 2nd Judicial District, which encompasses the North Slope Borough, the Northwest Arctic Borough, and the Nome Census Area. Public education in this report are grounded in law. Alaska Statute 14.07.168 requires the State Board of Education to prepare and present an annual report in person to the legislative committees overseeing education. This report ensures transparency and accountability in our efforts to develop, maintain, and continuously improve Alaska's public education system. By fulfilling the statutory requirement, we reinforce our commitment to providing an excellent education for every student every day. I'm sure you see these a lot, or this slide often. The Department of Education and Early Development is guided by its mission, vision, and purpose to ensure that every student in Alaska receives a high-quality education. Our mission is an excellent education for every student every day. Our vision is that all students will succeed in education and work, lead meaningful lives, and contribute positively to society as outlined in Alaska Statute 14.03.015. Purpose. DEED provides information, resources, and leadership to support student success statewide. Over the past year, the board considered and acted on multiple regulation packages and resolutions. Following formal periods of public notice and public comment, the board adopted several regulation packages over the past year. These actions included updates to teacher certification requirements and accepted examinations, as well as revisions to the early education program standards to provide districts greater flexibility in program implementation. The board adopted regulations related to the Office of Education Advocacy as a centralized resource and support hub for families, students, and educators navigating the education system. In addition, regulations were adopted to support Alaska Native language instruction, aligning literacy standards and instructional expectations with culturally responsive practices. In addition to regulatory actions, the board approved a resolution to support an alternative certification pathway for military affiliated adults entering the education workforce. The board appointed a student advisor and approved the renewal of multiple existing charter schools and granted initial approval for a new charter school. The board honored outstanding career and technical education programs across several districts, highlighting innovative models and successful work-based learning partnerships. Alaska's Education Challenge is a statewide initiative focused on ensuring an excellent education for every student every day. It was developed through broad collaboration with educators, families, students, tribal leaders, policymakers, and community partners across Alaska. Beginning in 2016, the State Board and the Department worked with thousands of Alaskans to identify long-term strategies for strengthening public education, and the framework was formally adopted in 2017. Some of you may have been involved in that at that time. Alaska's Education Challenge is organized around five shared strategic priorities that continue to shape the statewide improvement efforts. These priorities focus on early literacy, career and technical and culturally relevant education, closing the achievement gaps, educator workforce strength, and student safety and well-being. At the direction of the State Board, the Department conducted a comprehensive review of progress from 2017 through 2025, and the findings of that review were presented to the Board in December of 2025. The Alaska's Education Challenge report is available on DEED's website, and the link is included here for reference. The next section of this presentation provides a summarized overview of that full review, including a review of what progress looks like, indicators written in 2017, a review of statewide efforts, major policy actions, and system improvements since the launch, and a review of some data indicators of success and opportunities for growth. For each of the five priorities, the authors of the Alaska Education Challenge identified indicators describing what progress was expected to look like by the year 2025. These indicators were selected during the development of the initiative based on stakeholder feedback and were intended to illustrate progress at the state level. For Strategic Priority 1, the indicators are as follows. Thank you. Kindergarten through third grade reading measures submitted to the department will show positive trends. The number of students in grades 3 through 5 who are proficient on the statewide English language arts assessment will double. The number of students in grades 3 through 5 who are proficient on the statewide mathematics assessment will double. Recognizing that research suggests reading ability is one of the strongest indicators of math success, and student absenteeism rates will be reduced by at least 20%.
And we have a question by Senator Yunt.
Thank you. Good morning. Through the chair, to the presenter, could you please speak to briefly the READS Act and what type of results are seen out of that, and how you think that may be having an effect on it?
We will have some slides coming on that that gives you some more detailed information. Okay. So make sure you stop me when I get to there if it doesn't answer your question.
We'll hold it for then. Follow up.
Okay. One second. Ms. Stockhausen, if you could speak into the mic toward us and identify yourself when you're speaking, as we have two female voices,
okay.
It'd just be very helpful for our recorder.
Sure. Thank you.
Representative Yunt.
That's all right. So,
Senator Yunt.
That's okay. It's early in the morning. So it student absenteeism. So this was something that I think it's negatively affecting how we perform, right? And it's a major issue in Alaska. It's close to 50%. I think it's in the high 40s. So when we talk about a 20% reduction, that still puts us in the high 30s, give or take, or low 40s, right? So I know there's statute on the books, I believe, to be able to handle this and deal with this from time to time, but my understanding is it doesn't get exercised very often by local districts. So if you could please speak to student absenteeism and what we need to do to get this under control.
Sure. This is Chair Stockhausen. Oh, can I call myself Chair Stockhausen? When you're
okay.
I'll just say this is Sally Stockhausen for the record. Again, we'll be talking about that as we get further into the report. And then also, this is what progress looked like. These are the goals, so to speak, that were written with the original education challenge. And so we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the initiatives that we have going for attendance. It's really hard to not look at you when I'm talking. yes, we definitely agree attendance is vital.
And through the chair to Senator Yunt, when you take a look at these, some of the strategic priorities were set years ago, and for this one, because it's a little complex, it's the student absenteeism rates will reduce by 20%. What's happened since and what the board's been going through actually just yesterday, so I'm not sure how it's going to turn out, but is to get more SMART goals about this is what it is, this is how we want to improve it by this date, so very defined strategic goals. However, insofar as student absenteeism is a problem, actually, to your point, chronic absenteeism a problem. And that data that you referenced we're one of the highest states for chronic absenteeism, which is more than 10%, which is about 17 days. So about 45% of our students from grade kindergarten through 12 miss 17 days or more of school. And you are absolutely correct. Some of the information we're getting back that Chair Stockhausen will share is that on the READS Act specifically, we are those that are chronically absent. There's a division between those that are succeeding and not, since you referenced both of those. So great information, but coming in the report.
And Dr. Bishop, could you identify yourself?
Dina Bishop for the record.
Thank you.
I apologize.
Representative Elam.
Thank you. Appreciate the conversation. I guess I'm curious if there's any kind of details as to why the chronic absenteeism, and then as we kind of get more into the data, which I apologize, I know that you guys may not have this information, but is there any correlation to outside access? You know, sometimes it takes longer to go to Washington, D.C. from here, right? You know, if you live in the lower 48, it's easy. Is any of that being counted as absenteeism, or is that seen as travel? Is there any relationship at all there?
Sure. This is Dina Bishop for the record, and through Chair Tobin to Representative Elam. We have started a Strive for Five campaign and receive feedback, because this is a data point that we want to see reduced. And it actually is very local. It depends on the environment, the school, about why. I can share with you that our youngest students kindergartners have the highest, one of the highest rates of absenteeism, chronic absenteeism with more than 17 days, as well as our first graders, and then our 12th graders. As you know, the reasons between a 12th grader being absent, if you were, we were all once probably 12th graders and could choose to go to school ourselves or leave school ourselves, whereas that's not really the case for younger children. And so that's just a little mind's eye about how detailed it is, and the work around this through research really takes it to the local level, the most local level, which is the classroom and the school, to really create opportunities for success in this area. And sometimes it's education and education of the parents. Sometimes engagement, make sure, you know, schools are places that kids want to go, courses, sports. So all of these actually do have your total environment of your school and communication with families have something to do with it. But specifically to like overall Alaska, they're very varied because of the reasons why students are absent is varied as well.
Commissioner Bishop, can you remind us, what are the mandated days or years that students have to attend? From my understanding, we don't have mandated until 7 years of age and then to 16. Is that correct?
Yes, Chairwoman. Is that Chairwoman, Chairman? Chairman Tobin, that is correct. Our mandatory education in Alaska is seven.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hemshoot.
Thanks. I like chair. Just chair. Is great.
Okay.
Through the chair. I just wanted to mention that these goals were set in something like 2018, pre-pandemic. So when we talk about absenteeism, there's been a huge disruption in the entire system. So we have to keep that in mind. But my question is, I think it's important to clarify, when we talk about chronic absenteeism, the 17 days, the 10%, is that including school-sponsored events or excluding school-sponsored events? And I think that's important for all of us to have a common understanding of what we're talking about. So if you're, because a lot of our high achievers are absent, mm-hmm. you know, they're chronically absent, and yet they're high achievers because they're so engaged with activities. So does chronic absenteeism, and I don't know if we have a state definition, but the common understanding of chronic absenteeism, does that include school-sponsored events, or does that exclude school-sponsored events?
Through the chair to Co-Chair Hemshoot, an absence is an absence. So those are days missed from school. So it could be a school-sponsored event. If they're leaving school, it could be for a doctor's appointment that's excused. It could be for unexcused absences. An absence is an absence in Alaska.
Thank you. Follow-up.
Okay, just as a quick follow-up, I know in my home district, when teachers record a student absent, they're able to discern between school-sponsored and not school-sponsored. So there are data out there. Are those available to us? Is that reported to the department when we're considering, and I'm not disputing our definition of chronic absenteeism, but if we could, underneath that definition, then show the numbers according to school-sponsored versus, so for example, in my district, if you're going to travel to the state or the regional basketball tournament that happened in June, you're going to miss some days of school, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to impact your performance in school. So is the department collecting absences in those two categories, or are we, because we're defining it as for any reason, does that mean we're also collecting data as for any reason, or do we differentiate at the data collection level in the department between school-sponsored
sure. Through Chair Tobin to Representative Hemshoot, I'll have to get back with you, but I do not believe that we, because these are federal reporting requirements that were required through our ACES. So we could do, I do know that through our working group on Strive for Five, we have drilled that down, but it's not ubiquitous across the state in every district because it's not a requirement at this time.
It'd be helpful data to get. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Dybert.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. Through the chair to maybe Dr. Bishop, or my question is, since we're talking about absenteeism, thinking about when you're asking families and schools, I'm wondering information and data about breakfast for kids, if that is a driver to help bring up those numbers. Just moving forward, you probably don't know an answer, but I would just like to make sure that that's one of the questions, or as we think about, because I know when I was an educator, teacher in third grade, breakfast was one of the most exciting parts of the day, kids running into the school, running to the cafeteria to eat. And oftentimes I would go eat with them. And it was just a great way to greet kids, eat with kids right at the beginning of the day, and ask how their night was and if they're ready for the school day. So breakfast is a very important part of the day. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Deibert. And Representative Story.
Thank you, through the chair. Welcome, both of you. I wanted to say that my question is, how are you working with school boards, the School Boards Association on chronic absenteeism? Just a quick comment. When I was on the school board, we really looked into chronic absenteeism, and we looked at why kids were gone. And when they were gone for school-sponsored events, they actually were higher academically. And when we drilled down on that, we found that it depended upon the coaches, too. They would have times where you had to do your homework, and whether you're on the ferry or you're sitting in a gym somewhere. So there is really fine data on this, and I'm just wondering how often you work with the School Boards Association and boards to capture more of this information.
For the record, this is Dina Bishop, and the group Strive for Five is inclusive of all the school board as well, but there's also rules that there's a correlation or a relationship actually between sports and kids passing grades. And so one of the indicators and one of the hoops you have to get over to play sports is you actually have to be up on your grades. And so as Chair Hemshoot suggested, that it's not all absences are created equal with students not succeeding. Where we are most concerned is that our youngest students have the highest rate. And so while schools work on the high schools, and they always have with that engagement, it is a new instance for Alaska to have this chronic absenteeism. And we were actually, the data demonstrate that we were moving this way even prior to the pandemic. And so that education and importance of school is key to that. And sorry, Chair Tobin, I did not address you first.
Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you. This is Sally Stockhausen. So as a reminder, these goals were written back in 2017, 2018. And so these were from back then. And these are the progress highlights. Passage of the Alaska Reads Act in 2022 established a statewide framework to ensure every student reads proficiently by the end of third grade. Since enactment, several key components have been implemented statewide, including the following. Implementation of district reading improvement plans in all districts, the department reading program to provide intensive support to the lowest performing schools, and individual reading improvement plans designed to engage families in literacy progress. Statewide kindergarten through third grade literacy screening was implemented using the dynamic indicators of basic early learning literacy skills. It's so hard to call these by their real names because I'm so used to saying DIBLES and DRIP and IRIPS. So it's causing me to stumble. Sorry about that. Providing consistent and reliable data across all districts. Professional learning expansion has continued with more than 1,200 educators trained annually through the Science of Reading Symposium and expanded statewide access to literacy-focused professional development. Alaska Native language literacy and instruction efforts also advanced through adoption of the Alaska Native Language Arts kindergarten through third grade literacy standards and the development of indigenous language literacy screeners to support early reading in Alaska Native languages. So here's some of that data that you were asking about. The Alaska Reads Act requires the statewide implementation of an early literacy screener. Alaska selected the M-Class DIBLES 8th edition as the consistent screener used across districts. This slide presents 2 years of statewide data following implementation. The orange bars represent the percentage of students who did not meet the grade level benchmark, and the blue bars represent the percentage of students who met the benchmark. For each grade level, two bars are shown, one at the beginning of the year and one at the end of the year. In the 2023-2024 school year, which was the first year of full statewide implementation, kindergarten and first grade showed the most noticeable growth. Kindergarten demonstrated the largest increase, with approximately 24% of students meeting the benchmark at the beginning of the year and 60% meeting the benchmark by the end of the year. In the second year of implementation, the 24-25 school year, we again observed the greatest improvement in kindergarten and first grade, with kindergarten starting the year at 23% meeting the benchmark at the beginning of the year and 62% meeting the benchmark at the end of the year.
Do we have a question by Representative Himshute?
Thank you, Chair Tobin, through the chair. I love these data. It's really exciting. Do we have data from before the READS Act? Because quite a bit of growth is anticipated with or without the emphasis we're putting on reading. So this is really promising. So my two questions are, do we have data from before the READS Act with beginning of year and end of year? And then also going forward, my concern is, I think it's this year's or next year's fourth graders and fifth graders, that's when we're going to really know, in my mind, if it's working, is if those kids are also showing this kind of progress. So I guess two questions.
Okay, so I think we're both going to say something on this one. This is for the DIBLs, and you have to remember that we weren't doing this pre-READS Act statewide, and so it would be really hard to compare any data. I think it was spotty. I mean, some schools in our district, in my home district, used it, and some schools didn't. And so probably statewide that would be true. Did you want to add something to that?
Through the chair to Representative Himshute, this is Dina Bishop for the record. That's correct. We do have some, for instance, in Anchor School District when I was there, we did do a early literacy screener, but it was Ames Web as well. So not only was it a different, they're very similar, but some of the metrics are different about how they collect the data. So I would say no, as your a straight answer, that we don't have statewide data prior to this act.
And Senator Yunt.
Thank you. Through the chair to the presenter, can you speak to the delay on these results? So an example would be AK Star. We do not get the results in a very timely manner. So when we are talking about the improvement from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, doesn't matter what grade, how long does it take us to get the results?
Sure. Through Chair Tobin to Senator Yunt. Speaking that these are very quick. These they take a minute to give, and you have the results right in front of you. So these data are different than the Alaska, this AK Star. And those data do take, the results rather, take over the summer and into the fall. And we do take them alongside of MAP growth, which is a dynamic test which changes according to the student, and we put in our state test, which is standards that are specific to grade level. So no matter, it's by grade level and then also by skill level. And we have one test for that at the end of the year. The MAP growth comes back immediately. That is the growth model for the individual. It does take over the summer, as Alaska, through its design, has elected to have the portion that is the writing scored by hand, not by computer. Now that AI is in its advancement, that could possibly change. But specifically speaking, at this time, Alaska Star writing samples are scored by human beings, which takes over the summer to do.
And Commissioner Bishop, as we have some new folks here who weren't part of the Alaska READS Act work, can you talk about what happens with parent involvement from the beginning of the year to the end of year, and some of the interventions that are both proffered by the school and also by the family to ensure that these numbers and these categories change?
Sure. Is that okay? Through the to the chair, to the entire committee. The READS Act, one of the phenomenal things of it, and I just want to say it's one of the best pieces of legislation in my lifetime, I would say, in Alaska, so thank you for this. It has, at the beginning of the year, there is an assessment. It's a very quick screener, and from that moment on, depending on whether a child is on track or not on track, immediate communication is given to a parent, and that communication happens once a month as there are updates given, if you will. You know, to as we teach, we then report back to the parent. Not only is there communication, but there is also, if a child is far below, which they're really lagging in what's expected at the grade level. An individualized reading improvement planner, an IRIF, is designed, which really outlines in partnership with the parent about what is going to be done. And so parents have a mind's eye of the different additional supports that are going to be given in the school. They are specific, though, some of these IRIPs to speak to that they will be after or before school or out of time so that we're not pulling students from other subjects to do the double dosing, if you will, we call it, with additional resources. And so the communication with parents insofar as the READS Act is constant, especially for those and more so for those students who are far below.
And we have a question from Representative Story.
Thank you. Through the chair, Commissioner Bishop, when I look at this chart, what I think we can compare, having realized that we don't know what kiddos joined us when they turned six, I'm looking from 23-24 kindergarten data, and then I've gone to the first grade data in 24-25 because those children in 23-24 had the interventions. And I see that there is some summer learning loss, which we know that summer learning loss is a real thing, but it does seem to note some progress, not starting as far behind and movement. But I think that is the sort of trends we will be looking for, and it would be helpful in future reports to sort of kind of summarize those things. I would find that helpful anyway.
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Story. Absolutely, and we look to that change. Insofar as the comment made by Representative Hemshoot and what she would like to see, when you study states that have made these changes, it is over time because you're building competency and capacity. And I would like to share, although this report shared, last year having about 1,800 teachers certified, we have over 3,400 teachers educated in understanding reading. The jump from a skill-based, this is a skill-based, the curriculum-based measures are skills that are building blocks for comprehension. And comprehension is more than just those skills. And so I just want to share, and I will share with all teachers, that content, vocabulary is needed. Students need to know things in order to do well in assessments later on, because that they have a scheme, and once they learn how to say a word, it has to make sense about what that word is. So I want to caution everybody that it doesn't happen overnight, but I believe we are pointing at all indicators point us in the right direction. And for those states that have made these changes that I know were consulted, it was 10 years of progress moving in the right direction.
We do have two additional questions. I do want to point out and just highlight for folks, there is accessible to everyone the Alaska READS Act progress report that contains a lot of this granular level data. One of the really important pieces is kindergarten is not mandated in the state, and so we don't actually have kids until first grade. So sometimes the data is different. We also have a screener for when kids come into kindergarten that tells us whether they were in a Head Start program or whether they were in a pre-K program, which also helps give us some additional data on are they prepared and ready to learn. Senator Yunt.
Thank you. Through the chair to the presenter. So a comment and then a question. So I noticed a lot of improvement here in the earlier years. And then in third grade, the improvement seems to become, at least based off these 2 years, more difficult to obtain. Mm-hmm. Could you please speak to that? And if that's a continuing trend through fourth, fifth, sixth grade?
Sure. Through the chair to – it is difficult to talk to somebody back here. I hear your voice. to
wrong.
Senator Yunt. Yes, absolutely. And that – okay. That actually is that's really an impetus for having this early learning, that when a child is younger, it is easier – to impact their learning and setting them right on the right stage to grow in having the ability to learn to read by third grade. When those early literacy skills aren't learned to third grade, at that time you're getting so much content when you can't read. And I know it's not as simple as you learn to read and read to learn, but that's something that they talk about. But the impetus for this bill was to intervene early because it is empirical evidence, it's researched, that you can make a difference earlier in a child's life to be able to read. And to this fact, we do struggle a bit in all schools in third grade. They linked it to about a time, so a 15-minute-a-day intervention in kindergarten to help a child catch up equates to a 45-minute to an hour in third grade to help them catch up at that same rate. And there's just not time in the day because there's so many other important things. And so not only is it less expensive, it actually it takes less time, but it also, in a child's mind, they're at the point of that learning being so critical. So but thank you. And fourth, fifth, going up, it becomes more difficult to your question.
Which follow-up?
Follow-up.
Will lead me into the next part of my question. So this is amazing. I'm so grateful that we can track this now. This was not stuff that I think it was more of a gut feeling type of thing when we were kids, right? And so, you know, my little brother, my mom actually held him back in, I want to say, first grade or something. I think he did it a second time. And it was probably the best thing ever happened. And there's marked improvements. When we're getting to the end of third grade and only 52% of our children are at grade level or higher, is there any sort of, I don't want to say pressure, but discussions with the parents about maybe this is the point in time where we need to consider, and really I think that needs to happen sooner. I think it's easier to hold a first grade child back than a third, and it would be much easier. Anyway, yeah, if you could please.
Through the chair to Senator Yunt. This is Dina Bishop for the record. You're absolutely right. So that gut of yours is right on target because written into the READS Act in these meetings that if a child is far below, it's a once-a-month communication. But by third grade, there's a communication and actually a documentation of how a child is doing and would you like to progress or not by third grade. It doesn't mean that they don't happen prior to that. Many parents do like to do kindergarten, first grade twice. But by third grade, it's actually documented, and there is a face-to-face generally meeting with families. And when they do make a decision to move from third grade to fourth grade, understanding that they're far below proficient, there is a mandatory 20 hours of tutoring over the summer that is provided to the child. That can be in electronic tutoring. Many of our rural communities choose that. It can be face-to-face right before the next school year. But part of the READS Act was to ensure that even when the decision was made and the discussion happening and the parents understanding they're moving on without these skills, that additional supports are provided. So that's written into the Act.
And Senator Young, I'm going to ask you to keep your question tight as we're starting to get close to...
One more follow-up. I apologize. So do we know... So let's use fourth grade as an example. At the end of fourth grade... What percentage of those children would be considered proficient if they were third graders? Would that be 70, 80? If we took their numbers from the end of fourth grade and rolled it back to the end of third grade, the reason I ask, and if we don't know those numbers, maybe we should look into that, is because then that's something we could show parents and say, look, if the average fourth grader was actually a third grader right now, we wouldn't be at 52% proficient. We'd be at 68 or 78. Does that make sense?
So through the chair, Senator Yunt, sorry. okay. Some of that data is going to come later in this report as well. But usually this right here is the MCLAS, the DIBL screener, and it's only given through third grade. The next set of data, we'll talk about the AK star, and that will target that part of it.
Thank you. And okay. We have a question from Representative Himshue.
Thank you. Yeah, I saw in the full report, so not in the slide deck, but in the full report through the chair, that math, we were going to double the number of folks proficient in math as part of the strategic priority one. Based on improved proficiency in reading, we were going to see math bump up. I don't see that happening yet. Is that still an expected outcome?
Through the chair to Representative Himshute, I think that was a false assertion that just you have to actually teach math to improve math. And so what has happened through this process, and I'm not sure what the board, they're in the process of working to create SMART goals, and I do know that there is a separate math SMART goal that would address math and math instruction. And so I just will share that I don't think you can improve in math without teaching math, without students understanding numeracy like they understand literacy.
Quick follow-up.
Follow-up?
however we see in our science scores that we haven't added any extra effort in science, and we remain fairly somewhat stronger in science than in any other thing that we test. So I'm just always going to talk about science. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Dibert.
Thank you through the co-chair to Dr. Bishop, maybe. I just wanted to state for the record, when I look at the testing, I taught third grade, and the testing for K first and second grade, I believe, used AIMSWeb and Dibbles, and by third grade, the testing changes a little bit. It changes more heavily towards fluency and comprehension. I remember as a teacher, I had to actually teach how to – it was hard to use the data from the prior grades because you are reading from paragraphs now. So as a teacher, I had to teach how to switch to reading paragraphs and also typing. I remember teaching my students how to type in the test at third grade. So that is just something to think about. I know I didn't do Dibbles in third grade. We switched to map growth. So we switched systems entirely in – at least in the interior of the Fairbanks district. So that's a big, you know, just when we talk about third grade test scores, following up from Senator Yent's thoughts, comments.
Chair Tobin, through the chair to Representative Dibert. This is Dina Bishop for the record. And you're absolutely correct. Those two assessments are asking a child to do two different processes. And the Alaska STAR is a much higher look into as an assessment into the standards that have been set in Alaska, and can a child really comprehend and understand and see foreshadowing and all those types of things. So it is a major jump, and that's true, and that's why we do map growth to give some insights into that. But these really were designed for two different purposes. One is simply to get the individualized skills that are precursors to the second, but it takes a lot more than just reading instruction to become a reader, and you're absolutely correct.
Follow-up?
Yes, follow-up. And I just wanted, for the record, to state, like, when Senator Yent asked about fourth grade, so when you start those testing in those skills of fluency and vocabulary and foreshadowing and it was hard not to have information in third grade, but fourth grade teachers could look back at the third grade year, and then that's when that begins, and so that's when it becomes helpful. Thank you.
Senator Bjorkman.
No, thank you.
All right, Senator, excuse me, Representative Eichheit.
Yeah, thank you. I'll pass. Representative Dibert's question was mine, so thank you.
Thank you. Representative Story.
Thank you, through the chair, to the commissioner. In the more thorough report, we have the STAR student achievement results, and we score how the districts have been doing. And so you can just see the different levels of achievement. And I am wondering if the board, districts, how you work together to see what was, like, Skagway far above the charts. What is the Skagway district doing to get the achievement results that they are? And if you can... If the data allows you to, like, when you look at the achievement gaps and some subgroup is doing very well in one district compared to another, do you take the opportunity to do deep dives with different districts about the results they're getting and what they are doing on that pathway that they're having success with?
Thank you. Through Chair Tobin to Co-Chair Story. There isn't a systematic way in the state, and this was the first year we started to do that, and I started with the superintendents themselves. I meet with them every and just have an open meeting and want to share, and it's really to engage in that collegial conversation of tell me about yours and how are you doing this, and to kind of shine a light on, you know, if you have similar populations and you have similar circumstances, how can we make this happen? And I personally did talk to Skagway, and they related to high-quality teaching, a really excellent teacher, and their population is very small, so all of their kids get this high quality teaching from a specific teacher that they called out, that all these kids learn. They absolutely, so it's many different things, and it'd be many different depending on how you scale it, but it really does go back to high quality teaching. But we do do that. We don't publish it, but it is more in a professional learning community manner in which you do that. But this was the first year that we presented those data in that way so that they can engage in that conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed. I just want to let folks know that we are about 45 minutes in, and so I'm going to ask for folks to keep their questions hopefully short and concise as we continue forward so we can get through the entire presentation.
Okay. Thank you. So strategic priority 2 out of 5. Increase career, technical, and culturally relevant education to meet student and workforce needs. The indicators for what progress looks like by the year 2025 include an increase of at least 15% in the number of students who graduate having earned dual credit, obtained an industry certification, or completed AP coursework. An overall 4-year graduation rate of at least 90%, an overall 5-year graduation rate of at least 93%, and an increase of at least 20% in the number of students participating in career and technical education programs of study. Now remember, these were the goals set, or the goals back in 2017. So how we've done on those original goals so far, progress to date includes the following: awarding new career and technical education program of study grants to strengthen district offerings and develop pathways in high demand industries. Statewide collaboration has been supported through annual CTE conferences, regional consortia such as the Bristol Bay Regional CTE Consortium, and partnerships with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, the University of Alaska, and industry leaders. Student leadership and engagement have also expanded through the reestablishment and growth of career and technical student organizations and the launch of annual state board CTE recognition efforts. Additional efforts include the Career Guide Demonstration Project to expand advising and post-secondary planning for rural and remote students, as well as legislative action through House Bill 148, which expanded Alaska Performance Scholarship eligibility to include CTE coursework and strengthened access to career-focused pathways. This slide compares the Alaska's overall 4-year graduation rate with the graduation rate of students who concentrated in a Perkins Career and Technical Education program. A concentrator is defined as a student who has completed 2 or more courses within a CTE program of study. Across multiple years, students identified as CTE concentrators have graduated at consistently higher rates than the statewide average. These results should be interpreted as correlational rather than causal, as students who select CTE pathways may also differ in interests, motivation, or available supports.
And I apologize, Ms. Stockhausen, do we have data on how many students take the ASVAB?
I don't know if we...
Chair Tobin, we can look into that and find out. We do have partnerships with the federal government, so we could find out in Alaska who does take those. We can give those data for you.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay, strategic priority 3, close the achievement gap by ensuring equitable educational rigor and resources. The indicators for what progress looks like by the year 2025 include the current performance gap in English language arts and math for all student subgroups will be reduced by at least 45%. The current gaps in graduation rates for all student subgroups will be reduced by at least 50%. The proficiency rate for English learner students will increase to at least 65%, and the number of students in each subgroup who are required to take remedial classes upon entering college will be reduced by at least 50%. And how we've gone is progress to date includes expanded access to standards-aligned instructional materials and evidence-based strategies across content areas, including updated social studies standards and continued literacy initiatives from pre-kindergarten through grade 12. Implementation of the science of reading has extended literacy structures and supports across early grades, accompanied by statewide
professional learning, and universal literacy screening. Attendance and engagement efforts have also advanced through the Strive for Five, Attend School All Week campaign and the expansion of positive behavioral interventions and supports programs across multiple districts and schools. In addition, state-tribal partnerships and culturally relevant education efforts have progressed through tribal compacting legislation and pilot partnerships designed to strengthen local governance and culturally responsive learning approaches. This slide reflects the statewide assessment data from the Alaska System of Academic Readiness, or AK-STAR, for English Language Arts and Mathematics. These results are an aggregate of student performance across grades 3 through 8. The slide also includes results from the statewide science assessment, which is administered in grades 5, 8, and 10. The blue sections of each bar represent students who scored at the proficient or advanced levels, while the orange section represents students who scored at the approaching proficient or need support levels. This slide displays Spring 2025 Alaska System of Academic Readiness, or AK-STAR, English Language Arts results by district. Each blue bar represents an individual district's combined percentage of students who were proficient or advanced. The yellow bar represents the statewide proficiency rate, which is 32.7%. Some districts are not displayed due to small sample sizes to ensure student privacy.
And Ms. Stockhausen, maybe Dr. Bishop, can you just kind of walk us through a little bit about the support that the districts who are below the state average are receiving to improve their achievement results?
Sure. Thank you. That's a great question, Chair Tobin. Through the support system, we have an accountability through the program where schools are designated as CSI, TSI, just different levels of support. They are coached. It is a local effort to design an improvement plan. They're provided funding, coaching support to provide that in the assessment category. But there's also other opportunities, such as with the English Language Arts, there's two. There's the supports given through coaching through the reading team, as well as CLSD, the Comprehensive Literacy State Development Grant. So all of these different functions that serve through the department, actually one more is the ESEA, through title programming and additional supports. So these address, and these schools, all of those programs, the end goal is to improve student achievement. And so through those multiple avenues, resources are provided as well as guidance and support at the local level. Some districts that elect it join in to go in full force, in these professional learning communities. But at this point, it is a choice whether districts engage or not. So we can provide a more comprehensive approach about how the applications are given, but for those different groups.
Thank you. And Representative Elam.
Thank you. It's just kind of interesting data here looking at that. And so, I mean, kudos to Skagway for sure, because they are way up there. But then it's Skagway, Galena, Gregg, Delta, Greeley, Sitka. I mean, those are all smaller, rural, remote districts. How are they on the upper end of our numbers here when we're, you know, kind of always told that sometimes it's those other areas that are causing our results to show lower?
Through the chair to Representative Elam, I would say that we have academic learning and achievement concerns throughout our state. Mm-hmm. And again, I feel strongly that teachers make a difference, and high quality teachers and teaching what happens in the classroom matters. And I'm not talking about the affective side of teachers. Of course, we want that, but teachers that know their content, know children well, and know how to teach and hold kids accountable and have the rigor. I have seen just personally, I'm speaking personally now, I don't have empirical evidence of this, but through tragedies, specifically one, COVID-19, it is taken, and I don't want to blame that COVID did it. I want to share that when we get back into school, it takes kind of a reset to say, children can learn. All of these kids can learn, and kind of reprogram that have high standards for all kids and teach well. And, you know, a lot of these smaller places, however, do have, like I said, when we talk, there's just phenomenal teachers. And when you have fewer kids and less variance and student opportunity to get to those excellent teachers, you're going to find consistency over time. The more variance you have in your system, whether that's through standards or variance is going to cause a variance in your outcomes. And so if you might, well, the tighter that you look at things, the tighter you set your goals, the more explicit you are in your expectations, even at that local level, whether it's a principal and teachers to students, principal to, you know, in the system, the greater people are aligned to understand that's the target we want to get. Let's bring kids this way. And I think we're getting there. I think we're turning the tides. Our focus was on the health and safety overall of our communities, and now getting back to school to be school. And I would say a lot of teachers are very excited about that, to get back to that, because it was a trying time for schools during that time. But not that that is an excuse, because kids can do it and teachers can do it.
Representative Hemshue.
Thank you, Chair Tobin, through the chair. I never like these rankings because there's so much more to a school than just the academic outcomes. Children are on a trajectory, and if you have a lot of really young children in your K-12 district, it's going to look different than if you're – so anyway, there's a lot to it that this doesn't show us. But my question to you, and I'm grateful for so much of what's happening, but this question is going to be a little bit hard. Through the chair, I can't help but notice that Chatham in ELA is 11th lowest in the state. In math, it's 12th lowest. And then Edgecombe is 29th in our 0 to, I guess we have a few districts not in there, but 40-something rankings. And in math, 13th. These are what I would call at-risk districts in terms of academic achievement. And yet the board decided one superintendent was adequate for two districts, where I'll add there's no direct flight between the four sites in Chatham District. There's no direct ferry between those sites, nor is there a direct flight between Sitka, where Edgecombe is, and any of these communities. I need to understand the decision to have a single superintendent for two very at-risk school districts. Can you help me understand that decision? I'm sorry to go a little bit hard here, but I've had a lot of time spent on very concerned people trying to understand that decision, at least from the Edgecombe side.
Through the chair, to Representative Hemshue, this was a decision, just like school boards hire their superintendents. I was hired and I made this decision. And I will stand by it. I do believe that the most effective way and the most immediate way that you change student learning is not through their superintendents. And I'm speaking as a superintendent for the majority of my career. My ability to be and affect kids doesn't happen. The closer you get to the GIMBA, which is the classroom, the front line, is where it matters. That happens to be high quality, good teachers. The second indicator in evidenced by research is a high quality principal. Those two areas alone through research have the highest effect on student learning and achievement. You could take a look around the nation and superintendents are in and out, I think, in 2.6 years. When the middle management is high quality and principals have good training, high quality, understand their jobs, as well as teachers and support teachers in the classroom, and teachers know what I'm supposed to teach, I have the tools to teach, those two are the highest indicators. So given financial stakes around and where you want to put your value, I will again and again put the value on principals and schools and teachers and families. Those that are the local, the closest to the student is where I would always place the value in public education. I would get rid of a commissioner before I got rid of a principal. Yeah.
Follow up? Through the chair, the GIMBA walkthrough, can you speak to that? That's where the person in charge is on the ground walking through and seeing what that direct delivery looks like. So can you speak to the GIMBA walkthrough in this scenario with five sites spread apart?
Sure. Through the chair to Representative Hemshue, I'll have to get back with you. I don't have the exact specifications for the walkthrough that the superintendent of Chatham has done. Certainly, the person is located in Mount Edgecombe. Insofar as my walkthroughs, I used to have the ability to go on into villages the year before last. I went to 9 different school districts, rural school districts. There was a removal of $100,000 from my budget, which caused the state board and me not to travel as much. And so we don't have that. That was removed really, I think, because of the office in Anchorage was what it was shared with me. But I can get back with you on that.
Thank you. Can someone tell us, who may not know this term, what is a gimba?
The gimba is a Japanese term, meaning where the value is added. And I strongly believe where the value is added is in classrooms. Thank you, Madam Chair.
It's a Six Sigma, Lean Six Sigma business term.
Thank you. Representative Eichein.
Thank you, Chair Tobin. Through the chair, I thrown around some Japanese words here. To paraphrase, what I think I heard was a highly qualified talent teacher and a highly qualified building administrator are critical for student achievement, and I totally concur with that. So looking at the English graph before us, the next slide is mathematics, and I don't like some of the optics of this, it's useful, but looking at the top six in English, and you can do that in school districts in English and in math, the next slide, and then the bottom six, if I can use that word, in English and math, what's the difference in teacher turnover in those top six districts and top or bottom six districts according to this graph? Because I think that's key as we look at what can we do to get everybody basically a flat line that's super high?
Sure. Through Chair Tobin to Representative Eichein, I will get those data to you, but I can most likely bet my next paycheck that there's more turnover in the left side of the range than there is on the right side of the range that you're looking at.
So follow up.
Follow up.
I appreciate that. I look forward to that data, and I concur with your hypothesis. I think as we talk about equity, this is a key focus area. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Story.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, to Ms. Stockhaus and the commissioner, one thing that Natasha Van Imhoff did, Senator Natasha Van Imhoff, she had a contract with Mark Foster, did a study in 2019 where they did that. They tried to look at what the effectiveness of a teacher is, because that's your number one factor for increasing the student's results. And they, how do you say what an effective teacher is? And they'd use the method of how long the teacher, how experienced the teacher was. And they charted that, and they showed achievement rates, just as you were guessing right now, did do that. And that, of course, is very important to the policymakers around the table, because we need to use the tools that we think will keep our educators, such as our pension reform or making sure we're adequately paying our teachers. So is that a possibility, that data in future reports, can come to us? Because that is the data we need to be seeing. What policy levers can we pull to make sure we can keep, if that truly is one of the reasons why we're getting the achievement, the how long the teacher has been there, that would be really important for us to be able to quantify that.
Sure. Through the chair to Representative Story, we can look and see what data we already have when we ask for additional reports. Number one, it impacts districts, and they're already impacted, so we would want to not impact them, but also find out the financial backing of, and I know Mr. Foster just from being in the Anchorage School District as well. So my love is math. I was a math teacher, and my degree is in systems performance, and so this is right up my alley, so I love to look at those items as well, and we will get back with you about what we can do.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you. This slide displays spring 2025 Alaska AK Star math results by district. Again, each blue bar represents the individual district's combined percentage of students who are proficient or advanced, and the yellow bar represents the statewide proficiency rate, which is 32.2%. This slide displays the statewide four-year cohort graduation rate over the past 15 years. During this period, the rate increased from 68% to 79.8%. This represents an improvement of approximately 12 percentage points. Strategic Priority 3 focuses on the achievement gap by ensuring equitable educational rigor and access to resources for all students. A critical component of this work is ongoing monitoring of student data across subgroups to better understand trends and inform targeted supports. This slide displays graduation rate comparisons across multiple student groups over time, including economically disadvantaged students, students with disabilities, English learners, foster care, homeless, migrant, and military-connected students. The red line represents the overall statewide graduation rate for all students, while the bars show subgroup graduation rates across multiple reporting years. Strategic priority 4, prepare, attract, and retain effective education professionals. The indicators for what progress looks like by the year 2025 include 95% of new teachers in Alaska will have completed their teacher preparation program through an Alaska university. 90% of educators who are new to Alaska or new to the profession will participate in a cohort-based induction program that includes culturally responsive and trauma-informed training along with mentor support. And 100% of Alaska school districts will experience less than 15% annual educator turnover, including within district moves. Under Strategic Priority 4, progress to date includes several coordinated efforts to prepare, attract, and retain effective educators across Alaska. Grow Your Own Pathways have been established through the Teacher Registered Apprenticeship Pathway and the Principal Registered Apprenticeship Pathway, creating career-aligned, earn-while-you-learn routes into the profession and expanding Alaska's homegrown educator workforce. Participation in Educators Rising has nearly doubled, growing from 96 students in 2017 to 2018 school year to 189 school year students in 24-25, supporting district-based programs that introduce high school students to education careers and connect directly to university preparation pathways. The Teacher Retention and Recruitment Initiative, launched in 2020, continues to guide statewide strategies through the TRR Action Plan and Playbook, helping align efforts across districts, higher education, and partner organization. Certification modernization efforts have streamlined Alaska's electronic teacher certification system, reducing processing times and improving transparency and customer service for both educators and districts. Finally, regulatory alignment and the State Board actions since 2017 have resulted in more than 20 regulation updates that expanded alternative certification routes, created new certificates and endorsements, and strengthened reciprocity provisions and simplified certification processes to better support Alaska's educator workforce.
Representative Himshue.
Thank you, through the chair. I remain concerned about the TRR work, and I feel like every time I say something, I'm complaining. I love so much of what you're doing, so please understand the context of I'm looking for where we need to grow more. So this is not how I was in my classroom. I just want you to know that. So, okay, so through the chair, my question is the TRR work, there was an organization last year supported by the department to do a lot of the work that came out of the work group in 2020 and then through the playbook. And that implementation seemed to be going well, and then that was defunded. So who is doing that work now, and what do we do next? You guys are already doing plenty. You're not going to implement the TRR playbook, you, the state board, or even necessarily the department. You guys are getting an incredible amount of work done with a really small staff. So it made sense to me that we contracted out with an organization that is based in Alaska that could continue that work. I'm concerned about the future of that work now. Who is doing it? And, yeah, it's one of the most important things we can do.
Sure. Thank you, through the chair, to Representative Himshute. I believe you're talking about the ARC.
Correct.
Yeah, so that was a design that our team had.
If I could just add, that's Alaska Educator Recruitment and Retention Center. ARC.
Correct, yeah. And so we put out a service agreement. So it was actually a contract, and it went out to RFP to be able to do some of these items with the ultimate goal. It was a three-year meant to be a step-down contract. So these were services that districts pay for randomly already. And so it was to really coordinate those efforts through one organization, and that was one of the recommendations. That was provided the first year. As you know, the TRR has had been, when I first came in, it was $1.5 million for a couple of years, and then it was removed, and then some portion put back in, and then vetoed. Those services began, I believe, as $450,000 one year, stepped down, I think, to $300,000, then to $200,000, then really services that districts would pay, so fee for service. So it was never meant to continue. It was meant to gain traction. I do believe I heard the director, executive director, Lisa Parity, say that they utilize their reserves to be able to continue that, and I'm hoping that the original plan to have districts pay into the services, because they actually are services that are rendered. When money became tight, what the department did, the biggest goal for the state board was registered apprenticeships, not only in teaching, but in principalship. And so what one of the barriers of local teachers for that was actually to have that college paid for. So through a STEP grant, which is through the Department of Labor, we partnered with AWIB, Alaska Workforce Investment Board, wrote a grant called the STEP grant that can pay for apprentices. In addition, we took our 2A money to pay for those services to be able to have the mentoring. So the department is covering mentoring services, as well as the money is essentially going directly to the districts for their selected apprentices back into directly to the colleges. And so our funds for the TRR, being not only recruiting and retaining, but our paraprofessionals. So that being the goal, those finances, the limited finances that we did have through the 2A, which was professional development, went that route to support the apprentices, since we had people already in the program and also had that money reduced. So,
follow-up.
Thank you, through the chair. So I just have to comment. I think we have fewer than 200 apprentices. I hope that will grow, and I think that's great to support that. We know some of our best educators have that classroom experience. But we have 500 international educators. Who's supporting them? Who's to live internationally is one thing. To work internationally with other people's children is a huge lift. That requires support, not to mention support to the districts. So I'm just very concerned about the loss of investment in the work, whether it's the ARC. There's a lot to do, and losing that investment, you can't make up for that with 2A, you know, and I see you doing the very best that you can. However, that support and the principal leadership work, there's just a lot there, and our department is far too lean to do it within the department. So I supported continuing that contract or pivot to something else, but just dropping it is super concerning. Having 500 international teachers, the support to the district to deal with the visa situations, but the support to the actual teacher, the GEMBA, in the classroom, teaching internationally it's no small thing. So I am very concerned about this direction and the loss of support for that work.
May I comment? Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Himshute, those were things that we did explore, and I wanted you to know that when we put out the RFP for the contract, we did believe that it included international hiring. Throughout last year, we tried to get information about the international hiring through this organization, and the ARC let us know that international hiring was not part of that contract. So essentially, the AXA was doing that work outside of the ARC contract, and I can share those documentation with you, that they had reaffirmed with the department that international hiring wasn't a part of this. So my guess is that they were working directly with the districts on international hiring, because it was difficult for us to get that information and share those data as a subset organization that, you know, we sponsored. So they shared. So this was from ARC itself, that the contract for that did not include international hiring, that was a separate action that they were doing, and they clarified that last year well before any of the funding became not allowed.
At the end of the day, the work is undone as far as I can tell, so that's problematic. Sorry.
President Stevens.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm particularly impressed with the Educators Rising program. I think that's extremely important. It doesn't answer all of our problems, obviously, but the more young Alaskans we get in teaching, it's really important. So can you tell me, you probably can't tell me the effects so far. It's a little early to tell. But what is the potential? What is the growth opportunity in that program?
Do you want to talk about it? Chair Tobin to Senator Stevens. It's exciting, and it is major growth, and it is one of the career technical student organizations, what we call CTSOs, that we provide funds to. So they now have an ability to meet, you know, around the state. I can share that some of the students who participated in the program, Ed Rising, are now in some of their school districts' apprenticeship programs. So they were hired on as aides and working with a mentor teacher in a classroom to learn how to teach. And so, you know, fingers crossed, not only the students interested in high school could grow, but in some of our most remote areas, these students, because of this and working with a great mentor and a teacher sponsor on location, they are immediately entering the apprenticeship program and getting their college degree while being paid to be an aide and an apprentice. So hopefully the system will work out as we continue to build young people's interests as well as opportunities for them, especially in rural Alaska, to enter right into the profession. As you know, sometimes college for freshmen is difficult, and so this just wraps around those services. Students are able to stay close to home and be employed. So we can provide additional resources, but the working on both ends of it is certainly promising, sir.
Thank you.
And Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to request for the record that we might have another joint committee hearing specifically to talk about teacher recruitment and retention, the history of ATP, how the university has been involved through the process, how Educators Rising might fit into that. I think having all the players in the room for that conversation would be helpful.
Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. We will see where we can fit that into our schedule. Please proceed. I do just want to do a time check for folks. We have about 45 minutes. It is my intent that we will end on time.
Okay.
So I apologize in advance if I end up having to punt your question to the next slide just because we're trying to stay on task.
Okay. A part of that, this is Sally Stockhausen for the record. Another thing to add to the Educators Rising, because some districts can't manage having an Educators Rising chapter, and so I'm excited that the university is also offering, and I know UAS is, and I know UAF has, I'm not sure, I'm not saying they're not, I just don't know about UAA, but they are offering some dual credit classes in early childhood or other education classes that high school kids can take. And so if a district doesn't have Educators Rising, there are still pathways that can be established, which I think is also exciting. So that could also be a part of the meeting that that you mentioned about future things. This slide reflects updated educator workforce data completed by the University of Alaska Anchorage Institute of Social and Economic Research. The analysis updates statewide teacher and principal turnover trends through the 2024 school year. From 2013 to 2024, the teacher turnover rate increased from 21% to 28%. During that same period, principal turnover increased from 28% to 35%. This represents a 7 percentage point increase for both teachers and principals over the last 12 years.
Senator Yunt.
Thank you, through the chair, to the presenters. Could you please speak to this? What is turnover? So is that somebody going from one position at a school to another school, or is that somebody just retiring, getting out of the industry, leaving state? Could you please speak to that?
Thank you. I, through Chair Tobin to Senator Yunt, Monica Goyette is in the room, and I believe she set up some of these items, but I believe it's just a change in that. They could still be employed.
Thank you for joining us here at this Joint Education Committee. If you could please identify yourself for the record, and if you need Senator Yunt to rephrase this question, he's, I'm sure, happy to do so.
For the record, my name is Monica Goyette. I'm the Director for the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence, through the Chair Tobin to Senator Yunt. turnover in this definition is any movement. So whether that is within the district, outside the district, or outside the state, or leaving the profession.
Follow up. Through the chair, thank you. Can we get, maybe it's here later, I didn't see it, but can we get some statistics later on people that are actually teachers that are retiring and leaving or moving, what the turnover is where people actually leave the industry? Because this looked at first glance, this is painfully high. This is like, this would tell a bad story, right? But now that I find out it's just changing from one position to the other, and it's a little bit deceiving. So could we maybe get that at a future presentation on teachers that are actually leaving the industry?
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Yon. If you could provide that information to the committee, and we'll make sure we distribute it out to members.
That's correct. May I make a comment? So this is the preliminary data that ICER released in December. They are doing a full report that will have more disaggregated information that is due by June.
Thank you. And we have a question from Representative Elam.
Thank you. Just to kind of tag on to that a little bit, I guess a piece of information that would be nice to see is also maybe a larger window. Like, when did we fall off the cliff? Because, I mean, you always hear, we were able to keep our teachers years ago, but I don't know when that started. When did the trend become so high?
Thank you. And it may be helpful, as we noted in previous slides, when it comes to certain districts experience higher rates of turnover versus other districts, to maybe break it out based on Big Five versus some of the other, or maybe similar size like districts, to help get a little bit granular in that information.
Thank you.
Perfect.
While statewide turnover trends provide an important overall indicator, it's equally critical to examine the data in a disaggregated way. This slide breaks out 2024 teacher and principal turnover rates by school locale, which helps highlight where workforce instability is most concentrated. The most significant differences appear in rural areas. In rural remote communities, teacher turnover rises to 31%, while principal turnover increases substantially to 55%.
And Ms. Stockhausen, can you just break down urban fringe, rural hub fringe, mm-hmm. Just so we understand what is encompassed in those communities?
Sure. Through Chair Tobin, I could give a little bit of insight. Urban would be Anchorage area. Urban fringe, you could consider Kenai an urban fringe, Senator Bjorkman. And rural hub fringe is Bethel. That's a rural hub. Nome, where you're from, Senator. And rural remote, you could consider Antioch. Yeah.
Within this definition, rural hub fringe, where would Teller fall in? Because it's on the road system, but yet.
Madam Chair, I was thinking of that because I visited Teller from Nome, but that would be considered rural remote, I believe.
Thank you.
Due to the amenities there, Madam Chair.
This slide shows the number of full-time equivalent teacher vacancies reported by districts on the first day of school from 2019 through 2025. It reflects unfilled classroom teaching positions at the start of the academic year and provides a consistent point-in-time comparison across years. The trend shows a steady increase in vacancies from 139 in 2019 to 458 in 2024, more than tripling over that five-year period. In 2025, the number declines to 313 vacancies, which represents improvement from the previous year. This slide displays the number of emergency certified teachers reported statewide from 2021 through 2025, measured in full-time equivalent positions. Emergency certification is used when a certified teacher is not available and a district must fill a position to ensure students continue receiving instruction. The data show notable year-to-year fluctuation. In 2021, there were 233 emergency certified teachers, followed by a significant decrease to 104 in 2022. The count then increased in 206 in 2023, declined again to 136 in 2024, and rose to 209 in 2025.
Senator, excuse me, Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Tobin. Just a comment and a question, I guess, through the chair. Can I assume, I know we dropped our first day vacancies to 313, but then we significantly increased our emergency certification teachers to 209. Mm-hmm. So really it was not a significant improvement as we thought, because these teachers are not certified. Or am I reading that wrong?
Well, what that could be, I mean, and I'm mostly speaking from working in a school district and seeing what this looks like with FACES. You get some new students, some new teachers in, probably from outside, and they don't have cultural classes that are required, and so they go on an emergency certification. So they have all of the certifications to teach reading, or they have their degree. Often they just need to fulfill that six-hour requirement, which is important. But I think that could be a reason why you see this go up and down, where 200 in 2023, they didn't have their 6 hours finished, but maybe a chunk of those finished those 6 hours by 2024, so they weren't on an emergency cert anymore.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm.
Does that answer?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Representative Himshue.
Thanks. Through the chair, I want to confirm what you're saying. So it's not a temporary certificate when you haven't completed those required courses, it's an emergency?
Through Chair Tobin to Representative Himshute, it is a temporary one, but the emergency ones may be for other reasons. There was a person on emergency certification from one of the schools that I intervened with to help out the school district, where she did graduate University of Alaska Fairbanks, but she did not pass the requirements for the assessment.
The praxis.
So that member continued to take a college course to be able to fulfill that requirement for the praxis, and we did provide her as a math teacher an emergency certification. She did complete her degree. She completed all requirements except for the praxis.
Quick follow-up.
Follow-up?
I just wanted a moment to also, since I talk about all the negative things all the time, I went through the AK Teach to reinstate my certificate this year, and it was smooth and it was fast, and I am so grateful. I know I've said it before, and I want to say it every chance I get. I am not terribly technology adaptive, and so it took me a little while to figure out how to upload certain things, but once it was all uploaded, I had outreach because a piece had a glitch to it. That outreach happened within 2 weeks. I was able to resolve it, and so the whole process from the time I entered my data until my certificate was reinstated was something like a month, and that to me felt reasonable. So thank you. I appreciate that.
May I, Chair Tobin also mentioned, so that I just gave one example, but to Chair Stockhausen's example, we do have many people who do come from out of state, and it may not be for those two items. People that come into our state with an alternative certificate, if they didn't already teach for a couple of years, there is a provision that they can with a mentor. A lot of our military families come in this way, and so where they wouldn't have completed a job in another place, they had just graduated and then come off of an alternative cert, and so it would be in fulfilling other assignments and or getting a mentor and working with a mentor. So there's lots of different that the state school board has done in our regulations to try to allow and build the pool, but we still have to go through those state statutes. So there are some people, a lot of people from out of state that do get emergency certifications as well.
Follow-up, Representative
Sorry, Hinshu. Really quickly that I need to understand. So you're talking like a Teach for America program or a teacher fellowship program out of D.C. or something. If that individual comes and they don't have what we have in statute, but they have been teaching, they would get an emergency certificate. And then the ASAMP, the statewide mentor project, would provide a mentor for them, and there's something in regulation to bring that person, so to speak, up to speed.
Through the chair, to Representative Himshute, yes, that is correct. Without teaching experience for 2 years, we will not provide a teaching certificate in the state of Alaska. That's actually in statute. So we have designed the regulations to be able to bring people in, but also work towards that certification. So yes.
Quick final follow-up.
Follow-up. Representative Hemshue.
Thank you. And I just, you know, the teacher turnover rate that we show, I hope we're using the same definition, but according to RAND, the national rate of turnover is 7%. So we really, whatever we can do, we need to do. It's an all-hands-on-deck issue in our state. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondering what the timeline is for initial certification. How long do people have to wait?
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Senator. Senator Bjorkman, I apologize. If all items are in, it's 4 weeks. Generally, sometimes on the first initial certification, there are some documentation, but they immediately get response back, you're only missing this. But on average, all certificates now are 4 weeks.
That's excellent.
Thank you. Please proceed.
This slide presents the number of certified educators serving in Alaska schools on active work visas during the 2024 school year. This is the first year the department has systematically collected visa data directly from school districts. A total of 465 certificated staff were reported as working under an active visa. Of these, 280 educators were serving on H-1B visas, 180 were serving on J-1 visas, and 5 were reported under other visa categories.
And Ms. Stockhausen, can you talk a little bit about what the State Board is doing to help ensure that we can continue to recruit from these places, as I know there's been some federal changes?
We haven't talked about that at the board level yet, but
Thank you. I can answer partially that. Chair Tobin, we are working with our delegation, have sent letters to the Secretary. We've also investigated to ask for a waiver from that $100,000. That's the key. That would be unaffordable, absolutely. We have received feedback that Alaska is very unique in this and that we may not have when you have a lot of state partners asking for the same thing, sometimes legislation changes. Alaska seems to be out there on our own. And while we do use a lot of visas to fill, I would also say that we value the teachers that are coming from some of these visas. May I just share a story? When I visited Teller, an elder told me that they particularly liked to hire teachers from the Philippines because they matched culturally with their community. Like speaking when we had a speaking session when I went out there and visited. So this is of high importance. We're working, like I said, with the federal government, but our indicator in working with our law firms in Brumann is our law firm that helps us make some impact there. They did share that this isn't as high a concern in other places. And I would, again, my guess is just from hearing locally from the people that it is really of higher value to us than anyone else, not only because of the positions and the vacancies, but because of the connections with our culture.
Senator Stevens.
Well, my district uses a lot of these visa teachers, and my youngest granddaughter just loves her Filipino teacher. So, but I would ask, I'm not clear on, can they continue after a certain amount of years? Is only a certain amount of time they can be here? Can they be continued? And the citizenship possibility for these excellent teachers?
Sure. Through the Chair Tobin to Senator Stevens. We can start running a marriage thing. No, they get married, certainly. There are opportunities, mainly for the H-1B visa, but it's also difficult. It's not a guaranteed automatic, yet although the H-1B does extend to 5 years, they can work towards a green card with that. The J-1 visas are strictly short-term and have more regulation according to where they can be because of the amenities needed in our rural districts. So some of them struggle with having J-1 visas. H-1B does allow for that. And sorry for my joke, even with traveling OTs and PTs where schools are short of, we love it when they fall in love here in our communities because they stay. So to your answer, there is an opportunity, but it is still an uphill battle.
Right, I understand that, but it's such an issue and so important. And what is your involvement in this, or is it totally up to the districts? Do you help facilitate the hiring of foreign teachers?
Sure, through Chair Tobin to Senator Stevens. We don't do hiring at the department level. However, we do work with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, their deputy commissioner, and we meet to assist districts that run into struggles. We did have a few districts that didn't have proper paperwork, so it was, you know, they just ran through some issues when they were in another country recruiting, and so we assisted through the Department of Labor to help them out and to give them information. Certainly one of the biggest issues in certification that sometimes holds it up is the ability. Our processes require a Social Security card, so getting certification, we help in the necessary paperwork to have people understand what is needed in order to be able to work in Alaska. So we do offer those, but insofar as we actually go higher, that the department does not engage in those activities. That hasn't been a mission for us.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Stevens. And I do want to note that the House and Senate both passed a resolution in support of our H-1B and J-1 visa educators and to hopefully work with our congressional delegation to smooth those pathways.
Thank you for doing that. I can speak as a district employee. We love our teachers, and they jump right into the community. They're absolutely amazing. So thank you for doing that. Okay, Strategic Priority 5, improve the safety and well-being of students through school partnerships with families, communities, and tribes. The indicators for what progress looks like by the year 2025 include the number of students who report on the 2025 Alaska Youth Risk Behavior Survey that they did not go to school on one or more of the last 30 days because they felt unsafe will decrease by 35%. The number of students suspended from school for nonviolent and non-safety-related incidents in a given school year will decrease by at least 15%. For Strategic Priority 5, progress highlights reflect statewide efforts to strengthen school climate, student well-being, and safe learning environments through coordinated partnerships and practical supports. Key highlights include the following: expanded PBIS implementation to 45 schools across 14 districts, promoting positive school culture and behavior. Additional support was provided to Anchorage School District through the Title IV-A funding, 45 Anchorage schools participating. Continued statewide training and coaching to support implementation of Transforming Schools, a framework for trauma-engaged practice in Alaska. Nearly 15,000 copies of the framework have been distributed, and an online trauma toolkit provides ongoing professional learning and resources for school teams. As previously reviewed in Priority 3, DEED launched the Strive for 5, Attend School All Week campaign to address chronic absenteeism through coordinated outreach, shared data practices, and district-level resources, emphasizing consistent attendance as essential to academic success. The State Board of Education adopted a 2024 resolution encouraging districts to limit student cell phone use, followed by the passage of House Bill 57 in 2025, which restricts the device use during instructional hours to reduce distractions, support engagement, and maintain focused classroom environments.
Ms. Stockhausen, this might be a good slide, as the Task Force on Education Funding did have a chance to visit Windler and see the students who were located there after Typhoon Halong. And so I'd be interested to hear a little bit about what the State Board and what the Department has been doing to support those students.
Thank you, Chair Tobin. I can speak to that. Initially, just in the work with Anchorage School District, Anchorage School District did a phenomenal job of really welcoming families, assisting with getting them set up. The department did work with the Anchorage School District to get two grants, one for really trauma when there is accidents. So I believe that was about $450,000. We worked with the federal government to have those monies available. In addition, just for overall school funding to be able to support the additional staffing that they needed, not only in Anchorage, but to the original staffing in Bethel also, we believed needed to stay, because those teachers were redistributed portion of the teachers were redistributed in the other schools in the district, as well as some students left. And so we needed to support in both categories. So the department worked closely with Anchorage, and they were the primary one, but other districts did receive some students to articulate that. The name of the grant at the federal level I'm missing, but also doing site visits, speaking with acquaintances, friends with the principal there, and personally did some visits to see what were needs, how are they working, and speaking with teachers that were there. So outside of that, the department really provided resources to ensure that both the homeschool and Anchorage School District would be supported.
Thank you. We have a question from Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Tobin. Through the chair, it has been very apparent that the families who had to relocate from Halong are really still in stress. And I don't know if there is any, I'm wondering through the chair, if we have continued behavioral health supports for them, because it's certainly, from what I'm hearing, it's an ongoing thing. And I'm wondering, counselors, and then just a follow-up on that, and this is separate from the Halong question, but we are all very aware that we have had many students died by suicide across the state. And I am wondering, and it's great to see the whole board here today, what conversations you've been having along more support since that has been elevated among our student population. And if you haven't had any, I would encourage in more support along those lines. And my last question is on the youth risk behavior survey. It used to be opt out, and I'm wondering, and it was switched to opt-in, is it still an opt-in, so we're only getting a subset of students and those results? Thank you.
Through Chair Tobin to Representative Story, several questions in there. I believe in the schools in which the students from Halong were placed primarily, and Anchorage did cohort the students to try to co-locate them in classrooms and schools, and there is continued support there. When you mentioned families, I would have to check with the Department of Health of what behavior services are given to the families. I don't have an indicator of that, but I do know within the schools, Anchorage School District has supported those students quite well. They did a phenomenal job, Anchorage. Your second question, we do support awareness and have courses on suicidal ideation and things like that through our safety and wellness team. So we do provide that at the Safety Summit as well as throughout the year. Those courses are available asynchronously as well as in person to learn more about that. It was a key feature at the Safety Summit. And YRBS is, I believe it continues to be opt-in.
I think so too.
Thank you for that. Thank you. I just want to give folks a time check. We have 7 content slides and about 15 minutes.
Okay.
Positive behavior interventions and support, commonly referred to as PBIS, is a school-wide framework designed to improve student behavior, strengthen school climate, and create consistent expectations and support so that students can focus on learning. This slide reflects the number of districts and individual schools participating in DEED supported PBIS initiative by fiscal year, as well as by geographic view of participating districts across the state. It is important to note that these figures represent participation in the DEED supported PBIS network. Several other districts have also chosen to implement PBIS independently outside of the state network. Examples include Matsu and the Anchorage School District, both of whom have established PBIS practices within their local systems. While meaningful progress has been made toward the goals of the Alaska Education Challenge, continued and sustained effort remains necessary. We must remain focused on ensuring every student reads proficiently, graduates are prepared for a successful transition into post-secondary training, education, or the workforce, and all students are supported by a high-quality educator. In January, the State Board adopted a resolution reaffirming the 5 strategic priorities of Alaska's Education Challenge as a statewide framework for continued improvement and directing the development of a department strategic plan grounded in those priorities. This spring, we plan to develop SMART goals aligned to each priority. Once drafted, those goals will be released for a period of public comment to ensure Alaska's education stakeholders have the opportunity to provide input and help shape the final direction. This process is intended to maintain transparency, encourage board engagement, and reflect the perspectives of students, families, educators, and communities across the state.
Representative Eichheit.
Thank you, Chair Tobin. I think this question would be for Ms. Stockhausen. So thank you for this report. It stimulates a lot of questions. I've been taking all kinds of notes, and my mind's been very actively engaged. I really love the strategic priorities, but I've looked through the rest of the presentation. The one thing I don't see, but we ask this of our schools, of our students, is I don't see a self-reflective grade. Because I saw a lot of numbers in the strategic priorities, I'm really glad to hear the movement towards SMART goals, because I kept wondering, where are these numbers coming from? But it's good to see a bar set. So mm-hmm. What grade, and I assume the board has talked about this, what grade, whether it's a traditional A, B, C, D, F, or a standards-based grade, 4 through 1, I've used both in my 25-year career as an educator. What grade does the State Board of Education give to this report that you're giving today?
I don't know if I can give it a grade. What I can tell you is the priorities set in 2017 and 18 were lengthy. And so what we've spent the last year doing is looking at those, analyzing what progress we've made, and that's what these have been, these slides, to show you the progress, but then noting we still have a lot of work to do, and then making SMART goals that are a little bit more measurable, a little bit more focused to keep us moving on that. But I'm not comfortable giving you a grade. I'm sorry.
Follow-up? I appreciate that. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I don't have children, but when I go talk to their teacher, when I look at the schools they're going to, I've talked to a lot of folks. Some of our military folks have told me when they come up to, say, J-Bear outside of Anchorage, they actually look at how good the schools are, and we do have report cards and data. But I really believe in reflection. You know, Socrates is a person I uphold. You know, unexamined life is not worth living, and is a quote attributed to him. So I would love to have a self-reflective grade, because otherwise I'm sitting here and I'm trying to figure out, did you achieve your goals? And I can look at some of the numbers, but I would appreciate that in the future. But I appreciate your work, appreciate seeing the priorities, so thank you.
Thank you. You know, I would say in some areas we've made huge gains. The READS Act, I mean, it has really given us it's changed the conversation statewide, which is really exciting. The teacher apprenticeship model that has potential to just really take off in terms of getting teachers in our school system. And so we can look at that and see how we can make that work in terms of to meet that need. But I think we all, as a department, as the board, we are all really committed to keep moving us forward and focused on those 5 priorities. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Stockhausen. And I think that's a great segue into this idea of, we do rank our school districts. We do give them particular scores. And it's always helpful to understand how the State Board of Education feels like they are working to advance the education priorities that the legislature delegates to you as our entity that oversees our public education system. I'd also like, as your state board contemplates this question about what is their self-reflective score, to also contemplate what is your capacity. There's many pieces of legislation here that would add significant responsibilities onto the State Board of Education, not limited to potentially a similar vein within improving math scores called the Math Act, or potentially tribal compacting for education. That would add immense responsibilities onto the State Board of Education. education in addition to what you're already doing. Mm-hmm. It would be helpful to understand with the current structure of the state board, with your current membership having vacant positions still after a year, if you have capacity to add on all these additional responsibilities. I also have a question here that I would love to ask is one of the goals of the Alaska Reads Act was to make the data that the department provides the public much more accessible and much more streamlined. And I'm curious, what is the work that the State Board has been doing to ensure that the public receives all of the data that we collect in a very transparent form? Mm-hmm. I go on to the State Board of Education I go on to the Department of Education Early Development's website, and it is challenging for me to find information, and I'm probably more savvy than most.
Thank you, Chair Tobin. I would agree you're more savvy than most. That's a compliment. So presently, the Reads Act data of it in itself is available on the Reads Act pages and can be accessed. I think in the bigger picture, because you were instrumental in the bigger picture of a data dashboard, progress is not as strong as this one, and I can have our administrative services director, who has been overseeing that work, can provide a report on that. But I would say that is nowhere near where we need to be, and it hasn't come to fruition.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Bishop. And I know that we had talked about using COVID relief funds at one point to help build that out. As I also sit on our DEED budget subcommittee, it'd be helpful to know what additional resources the department needs to ensure that the public can get the information that helps them make the best choices about their child's education.
Yes, ma'am.
With that, we have 10 minutes, and we will be ending on time.
These entities operate under the umbrella of DEED, providing specialized statewide services. The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education administers financial aid and scholarship programs, supports college and career advising, and aligns post-secondary pathways with workforce needs. The Alaska State Council on the Arts promotes arts education, cultural preservation, and community enrichment through grants, partnerships, and statewide initiatives. The Division of Libraries, Archives, and Museums preserves Alaska's historical and cultural records while providing public access to library, archive, and museum resources that support lifelong learning. The Professional Teaching Practices Commission maintains ethical and professional standards for educators through certification oversight, complaint review, and disciplinary action when necessary. Mount Edgecombe High School serves as Alaska's statewide public boarding high school, offering expanded academic and leadership opportunities for students from across the state.
And we have a question from Representative Himshue.
Thank you, through the chair. I would like to hear from Chair Stockhausen, what is your plan for Mount Edgecombe? There's been a spotlight on the school. Mm-hmm. What is the state board doing in the short term, midterm, and long term for Mount Edgecombe High School? You are the board for the school.
So today we are going to vote on the possibility of setting up an ad hoc committee, and then we will set that up, and based on the results from that, that'll help determine our next steps. Both short-term and long-term.
Okay. And as a quick follow-up comment, I don't know if all of us need to be included, but I personally would like frequent updates from the department, from the board, on what's happening. It's a very important topic for the entire state, but in my particular district, there's been a lot of concern.
Yeah. And following up on Representative Himshue, we all have been receiving significant amounts of emails from concerned alumni, and so it's helpful if we can all talk with a single voice back to them about what is the plan.
Okay. Thank you. This slide provides a high-level overview of the department's three primary divisions and their core function. The Division of Administrative Services supports internal operations such as human resources, budgeting, procurement, grants management, travel, and information technology. The Division of Finance and Support Services focuses on school finance, facilities, and child nutrition programs to help ensure equitable funding, safe learning environments, and access to meals statewide. The Division of Innovation and Education Excellence leads statewide efforts related to student achievement, accountability, policy, data analysis, and program oversight, while providing technical assistance and continuous improvement support to school districts. And finally, last fall, co-chair Rebecca Himshut brought to my attention that the Federal National Blue Ribbon Schools program was coming to an end. For background, National Blue Ribbon was a longstanding recognition program that honored schools demonstrating high academic performance or significant success in closing achievement gaps. The federal program concluded in August 2025, with the 2024 cycle serving as the final group of national awardees. Later today, the board is considering a resolution to establish a State of Alaska Blue and Gold Ribbon Campaign recognition program to ensure the tradition of recognizing and celebrating school excellence can continue at the state level. If approved, the department would plan to open applications in the fall of 2026 for schools eligible based on the 25 and 26 accountability cycles, with the first formal recognition anticipated in March of 2027. The department would welcome the opportunity to present future awardees during the Joint Senate and House Education Committee annual meeting to further elevate and celebrate these successes. Thank you to co-chair Himshut, a lifelong educator, for bringing this opportunity forward and for her continued commitment to recognizing and celebrating excellence in Alaska school.
Thank you, Ms. Duffhausen. And the only note I want to make is we do have legislation that's currently in the body around creating a purple ribbon recognition for schools that are military connected. So I definitely encourage the state board to consider potentially expanding this recognition to also elevate our military connected programs, as I believe we're one of two states that have our schools on base and military connected as part of our public education system.
Okay, and that was the end.
Are there any final questions from committee members? Representative Elam.
Thank you. Quite a ways back in the slide deck, there was some conversations going on about some of the early K-3, and then we changed from there to from reading to some of the CTE programs. And I was just curious, at what age do we start getting engaged in some of those other areas, specifically STEM and CTE?
I can answer from the school district perspective, and then I will yield to Dr. Bishop for a bigger answer than that. I think it starts at early elementary. I mean, we have teachers who are doing all sorts of robotics and all different kinds of things at the early elementary level all the way through.
Thank you.
Yes, through the chair to Representative Elam, this is Dina Bishop for the record. And really that relates to my statement earlier about content. Although we strive for the reading to get, you know, we want to have literacy. We can't forget that content is given through all those other subjects, and knowledge creates that understanding and critical thinking, so they go hand in glove. So while in elementary school you might not call it, this is career technical education at its early start. Through sciences and social studies, we want to begin to engage young people in those subjects and those content areas. In middle school, I would say they more formally move into exploratories around careers, and then, of course, really move into specific pathways at the high school level.
And we'll have our statewide final question from Representative Dibert.
Thank you, through the chair. I believe, just a follow-up to Representative Elam's question, I believe my fourth grade colleagues had to do the science NAEP testing. I was in third grade, but I believe that was when testing happened for science, at least.
Thank you. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We want to thank our State Board of Education for being here with us. We deeply appreciate your service to Alaska and your work to ensure that we have a high-quality public education system. We know that we, as the legislature, cannot necessarily oversee all the day-to-day operations, so we really appreciate the work that you do. With that, this concludes our agenda for today. Just to let folks know, the Senate Education Committee is canceled for this Wednesday, and we will not be meeting this Friday, as we have Anchorage Caucus this weekend. Also, the House Education meeting will Education Committee will be meeting Friday at 8 a.m. The next meeting of the Task Force on Education Funding will be on Monday, March 16th. It will be right here in the Davis Committee Room from 3:30 to 5 p.m. It will be focused on student transportation as well as after-school programs. We will also have a presentation from the Department of Education and Early Development on transportation. I encourage everyone to join us at 3:30 on March 16th. As there is no other business before us today, this concludes the joint meeting of the House and Senate Education Committee, and I will adjourn us at 10:01 a.m.